Hello, everyone. I'm Crystal Bauer, founder of Live Greatly. After having practiced in mainstream medicine for a number of years, my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. This revelation led me on a unique journey to explore exactly what wellness means and how best to attain it. My goal with this podcast is to share some of my findings to help my listeners find their paths to achieve optimal health in mind, body, and spirit. Now, for a quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are purely the opinions of the author and are not intended to provide medical advice or treatment recommendations. The contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only, and always seek the guidance of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional when you have any questions regarding your specific health, changes to diet and exercise, or a medical condition. And before taking any medications, including over-the-counter drugs, supplements, vitamins, herbs, always consult a physician or qualified healthcare professional. So let's jump into the topic for today's podcast. And today we're very, very lucky to have an amazing guest, Sensei Koshin Paley Ellison. And Koshin is a Zen teacher, a Jungian psychotherapist, a co-founder of the New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care, and also an author with his most recent book being Wholehearted, Slow Down, Help Out, Wake Up. Koshin also teaches at the Andrew Weil Integrative Medicine Fellowship, which is where I was lucky enough to meet him. So thank you so much, Koshin, for being my guest. I'm really excited to talk with you today.
Oh, it's a total pleasure. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, I wanted to start out just to hear a little bit about your background. And I'm curious if you've always led a spiritual life or if there was something specific, you know, on your journey that kind of led you down this path.
Big question. And so I would say, yeah, I think that I've always had a sense of the spiritual, and what I mean by that, by my relationship to the larger reality. I was always felt very connected to, from when I was a little boy, to the vastness of trees and the sky, and feeling really interested in the perspective of being very small amidst the vastness. And so I think I've always been in this kind of mindset since I was a wee boy. And I became really interested in Zen like when I was around 6 or 7, and kind of claimed it a little bit more when I was 8.
Wow. Now, was your family into Zen?
No.
Wow.
But the interesting thing is my mother went to Japan before I was born, and to help her sister, my aunt Linda, with her kids who were being born in Japan at that time. And so my mother had brought back a bunch of Japanese art and kind of Zen-like things that were in our house, and as well as, you know, there was this photo of her standing with this smile that actually I didn't often see myself, but was in this photograph of her in front of this great Buddha in Kamakura in Japan, which I always found intriguing, in particular because she seemed so happy. Yeah.
Wow.
I hadn't thought of that until now.
Yeah. And then your path just kind of led you in the direction of where you're at today.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like lots of surprises, and, you know, here we are.
Right. Yeah. You know, did you have any big events that you felt were really kind of turning points for you? Or it sounds like that this was kind of just your journey and you knew early on. I mean, for me, I feel like with my background, like I was just kind of, I say mainstream medicine, but more westernized medicine, you know, like very scientific and very factual. And I wasn't very open, I don't think, to the spiritual aspect of myself for quite some time. And then with my mom's diagnosis, like that kind of opened up this whole world for me that I had kind of closed off, I think, after I had gotten into my probably like teenage years as a child. I think I had that. But, you know, as I got older, I think I forgot. And for me, it was this big event, you know, it was this like, oh my gosh, this unexpected, you know, kind of trauma for the family. And that opened up this door of like exploration and curiosity. And, you know, I think a lot of wonderful growth for me as as far as spirituality and integrative medicine and just looking at healing in a, mm-hmm. and wellness in a new light. I'm just curious if that, if you had anything like that, or for you, if it was more of just like a natural progression, like a path.
Yeah, I think for me, it was I could create a very clear storyline of different events, like that feeling and looking at art and looking at that photograph of my mother to, you know, my grandfather showing me this picture of a Zen monk in Tokyo and realizing that's what I wanted to be when I grew up when I was 8, and meeting a karate instructor after I realized, oh, you can have a teacher who can teach you about the world. And I found my first, I felt like actually a spiritual teacher who was a karate teacher, but he was a Zen, turned out a Zen practitioner.
Wow.
When I was 11. And so we used to practice really intensely. And when I was like 11 years old, which at that time, I of course felt like I was learning a superpower. And so I think there's a lot of series of events. And then by the time I was 17, I had met my first official Zen teacher and started studying with him. And so I think that there was a series of events that always brought more and more deepening into something that clearly was always there.
Right, right.
Mysterious.
You know, for me, yeah, yeah. You know, with everything going on around the world right now with COVID-19, you know, what I found personally, I think having had to face a lot of my fears with my mom's diagnosis, and I ended up then volunteering at a hospice, and I kind of just put myself into all of these situations that I had before feared, right, to kind of work through it. So I think that has helped me, I guess, prepare for right now, right, with everything that the world's going through. And I feel like I have my self-care practices and spiritual practices in place, which are supporting me. But I'm thoughtful, like, or I'm curious if you have any suggestions for people right now who are struggling, you know, who are in this, you know, in a lot of fear. And I think everybody's having some sort of fear and uncertainty right now, but just curious with your spiritual perspective, if you have any thoughts for people on how they can try and find some peace and clarity right now with everything going on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a time of radical uncertainty, disorientation, and suffering. And to, in some ways, normalize that, like, wow, the entire world pretty much is going through this. And mm-hmm. so none of us know how to do it because no one has ever done this before. Mm-hmm. And so I think in some ways to realize that part of interconnection is to realize that our experience individually is also happening in Kenya, is happening in Japan, it's happening everywhere, in Iran. And so I think that to really consider, take a breath and realize, like, wow, we are all going through this and it is so hard. And, you know, how we are in it is everything. And so the main thing I've been encouraging my students and other folks to do is to actually put both of your hands on your, what we call your hara in Zen. It's the place 2 inches below your belly button. And like, I've just been really enjoying putting my hands there and really dropping down into my breath right there and allowing the breath just to soften and soften. Because I think in many ways, this time is with so much anxiety, so much fear, like our breath actually goes up in our body, and learning how to bring it down and actually almost remember that we have a body and to just drop into the sensation of like, all right, I'm here and I have a body and I can actually, our body actually, when we can soften into it, in my experience, knows how to take good care of us in a way. And so it can teach us how to be, have a strong back and open shoulders and whatever uprightness looks like in our body and mind. Like, to me, it's a great thing to like reflect on during the day, you know, am I feeling upright right now? And what and that look can look like a lot of different things. That could mean like, what are my values right now? Mm-hmm. And how do I soften into them? Because I think in these times, the mirror of who we are is extremely close. And how do we take this time to realize again that it's scary, that there's so much unknown? This could go on for a week. It could go on for 18 months. It could go on. We don't know, actually. And that's the truth. And so how we are in time is who we are. And so how do we kind of come back again into our body, into our breath, into our softness and say like, all right, how do I want to be in this day, in this moment, in this breath?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm feeling relaxed just hearing you talk about it.
I mean, it's amazing because it's really what we have. And the other piece that I think is incredibly important is that email and texting does not actually help regulate our brains and our nervous system, but hearing the voice of people we care for and seeing their faces does. Mm-hmm. And so to make sure that there's some voice and even video chat or whatever device or program you're using to see people's faces, at least, you know, having regular check-ins is very important. And to really have the voices in your ears. And so I think actually that's why like this kind of podcast is really helpful, is like to have human voice, because I think the fear can take us out of the human realm.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you know, go ahead.
Yeah. So no, it's just about keep, you know, being clear what our vow is, what our values are, rooting it deeply in the softness of our belly, and then widening out into connection, I feel like is so important.
Mm-hmm. That's really good advice. I found myself doing a lot of like texting, and you know, more so than normal, right? And I always try and be mindful about technology and, you know, try not overdo it, but I'm definitely using it a lot more now. And I'm curious with the, you know, with the social distancing, we're not, you know, obviously we're not able to have that like physical connection, but I like your idea about, you know, maybe FaceTiming or phone calls. But I think for some people, they may not be as comfortable with that because they're so used to like just texting. You know, it's like, I think a lot of people have gotten out of the habit of making a phone call, as silly as that sounds, but it's maybe, I don't know if it's just because it's so convenient now to text or what it is. But like, I remember growing up, like we didn't have any of this stuff. Like, you know, it was phone calls. You would actually have a conversation with people. I'm curious what your thoughts are on how people can get more comfortable with actually having conversations. Because I do think that some people are afraid of, I don't know if it's maybe afraid of rejection or just it's out of their comfort zone.
Which part is out of their comfort zone?
I think like putting themselves out there for like an actual conversation. Right. You know what I mean? Versus like a controlled, like, you know, like emoji text. You know, like it's different.
Yeah, like have fun with your TikTok, but you know, also take a risk and extend beyond your comfort zone. And often my experience is that in myself and working with students and other folks is that what we want most, and we're actually as mammals, you know, a lonely monkey is a dead monkey. It doesn't go well. And so learning to really attend to connection, and it doesn't actually one of the things I've been thinking about lately is in the last like year or so is like who cares if we're uncomfortable? You know, like we sometimes give way too much stock into, well, that doesn't feel comfortable. And so lately, with a very kind of humorous attitude, just say to yourself, like, who cares that it's uncomfortable? It's like, why? How is it that that's become so important that it's uncomfortable?
Right at the fellowship, I remember you had us do the exercise of staring at each other, like right in each other's faces and making eye contact for an extended period, which I don't even do with my husband. You know, it's like, this is very uncomfortable, but you got that point across, you know, and I think it's kind of one of those moments where like, okay, if I can handle this, like this other stuff's no big deal. But I totally agree with that.
But it's like that we forget actually that over time when we kind of get over the hump, I don't know, maybe you could give an example, because like, what did you feel after you kind of worked with your discomfort, just being with the person, looking at them? How did that feel in the end?
In the end, I was like, that was weird. You know, it was more just like that was really weird. You know, like I didn't know what to make of it. I think
what did you feel towards them?
I think you feel very exposed, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a weird feeling. And you're kind of aware of this, like, just, I don't know if it's an insecurity or just feeling uncomfortable. But then at the end, it's kind of like, all right, I did that. There we go. Like I'm a little bit stronger for it. Right. And that's kind of been one of my things too with my journey is I like pushing through those fears because I don't like limiting myself based on them. You know, I think a lot of people are nervous about making those like real connections. Mm-hmm. And I think you talk about this, I think, in your book. But it's just right now, I think it's we have to be creative and come up with new ways, right, to try and make those connections now that we're all home and everyone's feeling a little isolated.
Well, I think that many people, you know, before this crisis, we were in another crisis, you know, which is there's a pandemic of social isolation, right? And so, you know, the new generation now, you know, 35% of them said that they don't even have a good acquaintance, never mind a good friend.
Oh my gosh.
So that's like the youngest generation now. And so like we are going into this pandemic where people are already socially isolated, you know, even in their own families, like people don't know how to connect to each other in meaningful ways. Mm-hmm. And so I think in many ways, this is, you know, be very interesting how this moves for people because people are now trapped in some ways with some of the people that they don't know how to connect to in a meaningful way. And so there's an opportunity to say like, wow, like, who are you actually? And to be curious about who you actually live with and who are the people who really come to mind that you say like, wow, I have not really connected to so-and-so maybe in many years.
Right.
And now we have that opportunity. And so I've been hearing all these like beautiful stories about, you know, people reaching out to people they haven't talked to in like 15 years who they realize like they totally love or felt loved from and never really told them. And so I've also been hearing in this story, in this time of social isolation, you know, these beautiful stories of reconnection and intimacy. And I guess another thing that worries me, I could say, is this expression about social distancing. And it's so interesting that that's what was chosen as the guideline when actually what is meant is physical distance.
Right. I know.
And I find it very disturbing. And I think that you really see that, like, even in our building here in New York City, you know, that people, many of us have lived in this building for 20 plus years. And now there's like this skittishness and fear when people see each other.
I know.
And I think it's because of this kind of socially distanced, don't be social, don't be, you know, distance yourself socially. And I think that is really deeply unhelpful. And so some friends of mine and I are, you know, keep talking about, like, let's like reclaim the language here of safety, which is physical distance, and socially connect and physically distance, you know. So it would be much more helpful if that was the messaging, was connect socially, physically distance, you know.
I completely agree. Yeah. We had a surprise visit the other day. It was my son's in preschool, and I wasn't expecting it. And one of his teachers rang the doorbell, and I saw someone walking to the door, and my immediate reaction was like, oh no, like, you know, which is so ridiculous. Like that, I don't want to think like that. And I'm thinking like, who is that? Because like, I'm again, that social distancing, right? And it ended up being his wonderful teachers had come, and they were kind of standing back on the lawn separated, you know, the distance they were supposed to be, but just waving to him to say hello. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was just so special, and just like letting him know, like, we care, you know, we care about you. And I thought that was really, really thoughtful. But I do have concern about when this is all over, like what the ramifications are going to be for people as we try and reconnect again, right? As like you get back to interactions, are people going to have this fear? I think we'll just have to see how it all plays out. But I like your idea of trying to change the language. I think that would be really helpful for people too.
Yeah, I feel like it's so important. You know, it's like actually life-giving. It's like the social connection is actually where we are going to be healed and healing. You know, if we think about the heartbreak that's happening right now in our medical system, where, you know, a friend of ours, her father was actively dying. She couldn't see him. Mm. And then she had to arrange his funeral on the phone.
Oh, geez.
She never saw his body, and she's going to get his ashes. Aww. You know, we're also living in that time where, my goodness, if one of us gets sick, we might not see that person anymore.
Right.
And that's like extremely real. Like if somebody goes to the hospital, or here in the city, if you go to the Jacob Javits Convention Center, where most people are going to go. And, you know, so how do you really, like, there's something really scary about that. And at the same time, how do you use that fear to say, like, wow, let's not miss a moment here. Let me really make sure I've told you, you know, if we think about my friend Ira Biok's, you know, five wishes, you know, at the end of four, you know, to say, have you told the people in your life how much you love them? Like, to me, this is a wonderful practice for this time. Have you apologized for transgressions? Have you thanked the people in your life? Like, to me, it's like, we don't know if we're going to live or die ever. But now we realize, like, wow, like, it's more real for most people.
Right.
And so how do we use that to actually wake up more?
Right.
And
use it as an opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. And to live a more wholehearted life, so that you're living a life where you're aware of what you're grateful for. You're aware of what you're thankful for. You're sorry for what you're sorry for. The people that you love know how you love them. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, it's a much more wholehearted living, you know? And so I feel like the interesting thing about this pandemic is that, yeah, it's scaring people out of their minds. And how we use that fear and that uncertainty and the discomfort to wake up.
Yeah, for sure. And to look at your life and see what needs some attention.
Totally.
I wanted to get your thought on meditation. I know that that's something that you have a lot of experience with. And in the fellowship, I remember you saying something to us, which stuck with me, and it was "Just Begin Again." And I was hoping you could share with everyone what that means and what role you think meditation can have for people right now.
Well, meditation is an amazing opportunity to practice learning how to not run away with your thoughts. Many people think that meditation is supposed to make them feel peaceful and calm, but it actually is not about that. It's really teaching you the liberation of how to be able to, and no matter what is happening, come back to the softness of my breath. And I can be with whatever is coming. It's so amazing. And so to me, it's about how do we practice that, you know, together. So meditation really is a way of learning how to fall down and get up. You know, in Zen, we talk about, you know, falling down 7 times, get up 8 times. So we're constantly going to make mistakes. We're going to get swept away by our fear. We're going to worry. We're going to, you know, catastrophize. We're going to do all these things, and no big deal. And we can come back to our breath and our softness. So meditation to me is an amazing practice of just returning to what is in this moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is that what you guys teach at the Zen Center that you're a co-founder of?
We do. We teach that. And right now, actually, all of our meditations are online. So like anyone can participate in them anywhere. And yeah, and that is the heart of what we do, because we really feel that care needs to come from, for us, it needs to come from that space of non-reactivity, of softness, of compassion, and where we have more access to our own wisdom in the wisdom of the world.
Is it open to people of all different like spiritual beliefs and practices, or you know, all different religions? Is it open to everybody?
Definitely. You know, we have people of every kind of faith and no faith. We have acrobats and hedge fund people and artists and all kinds of people practice with us. So everyone, people who are fed Catholic nuns and rabbis and imams and just folks. So everyone is just most welcome. And for us, it's really just, it's a practice of just returning.
Mm-hmm. How long do you meditate every day?
The minimum of usually about an hour, and sometimes up to 8 or 9 hours if I'm on retreat.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Do you have any self-care practices besides meditation that you do every day?
Well, I don't think of it as self-care, but I, to me, I think of our life is a life of care. And so to me, you know, I eat well, I have loving relationships, I meditate, I exercise every day. Taking care of my life, I think, is what allows me to actually be caring, both to myself and others. And so to me, it's like that multi-directional. So if we're feeling nourished, if I'm feeling nourished, then no problem caring for other people. But if I'm feeling really depleted, then that's what I'm offering other people.
Right.
And so to me, it's so great, because it's just about care begins with how we're nourishing ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that you want to share about your recent book, Wholehearted Slow Down, Wake Up, Help Out? And also, I'm curious how people can find it.
Yeah. So, yeah, the new book is really designed to be a good companion in these kinds of times. And really, I think, down to earth and rather funny. And and helpful. And so it's designed to be a companion, and it's available at any major book place, as well as it's on Audible. And so these times also, I was talking about hearing people's voices. So Audible is a really nice way to, you know, tune in to hear someone, you know, telling you their story. So that's also available.
That's wonderful. And we are about to come to a close. Koshin, anything else you want to share before we end?
Well, the founder of our tradition in America, Maizumi Roshi, used to say, you know, the most important thing is really to learn how to appreciate your life. And so here we are in the midst of maybe unwelcome change. And yet, how do we use it to appreciate our lives? So, yeah.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Koshin, for being my guest. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for tuning in today. You can follow Live Greatly on Instagram at livegreatly_co and on Facebook at livegreatly.co. You can also learn more about Live Greatly on my website, www.livegreatly.co. I'm also available for speaking opportunities on multiple wellness topics and optimizing mental health, so please reach out if I can be of help to you or your business. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, encouraging you all to awaken your ultimate potential.